Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. It's been a little bit of a break for the show, and there's not really a good explanation for that other than we're really lazy and we don't like to write things and we don't like to talk, and that's how shows don't get made. The flip side of that is it's just been a sports bonanza, and we've been doing a lot of columns lately, and this is the first time we had a chance to get on the air. And so this is a really extra special night, so we really appreciate everybody listening. And to really put an exclamation point on it, we brought in our superstar correspondent, Bryant Knox. He's many different faces at Oregon Sports News, but he's also a contributing columnist. He's an editor. He's so many things. Face of the franchise. Bryant, we really appreciate you coming on tonight. And how are you doing this fine evening?
I'm great. I don't know about the franchise, whether I'm, you know, the historically great Boston Celtics franchise or the very middling Brooklyn Nets franchise, maybe hopefully something in between, but I appreciate it nonetheless.
I'm thinking like Brandon Roy, that you're just number one in our hearts. We don't care if you didn't win a title or if you didn't even win a playoff series. You're still just, to us, you're the greatest that ever played, and you were cut down in your prime. That's who you are to us.
I will take it. If it weren't for that knee injury or that desire to, you know, eat Cheetos and drink microbrews, one of the two, the knee injury or those things, one of them definitely prevented me from reaching, you know, true greatness. So either way, I appreciate the intro and any kind words you have to say. I'll probably reject all of them, but that's okay.
That's okay. Modesty is a virtue, and it's not something we see a lot anymore today, so I'm very proud that you still have it. Speaking of Roy, do you if you see the number 7 on a Blazers jersey, does it still sting a little bit?
I think that jersey will get hung eventually and not too far into the future. You know, Kobe is getting his jersey hung up on December 18th, and I think that is obviously the right decision on the part of the Lakers.
Sure.
And, you know, as far as the Blazers are concerned, they have hung jerseys for players who did far less than Brandon Roy in much more time. So I think that his jersey will be hung from the rafters. It will be one of the X up there. I don't even know how many are up there at this point.
Not many.
So I'm not too worried at this point. It'll happen. And when it does, it'll be perfect.
Which number of Kobe's are they retiring? 8, 24? Are they combining it to 32? What are they doing?
They're doing both 8 and 24.
Wow.
Which I think is pretty perfect. I know that Kobe tried to separate himself from the number 8 for a while.
Right.
And I think that it was a decent career move.
It was
good.
He
had both personal and professional reasons for changing his image. By the time he ended his career, I think that people recognize he did really great things with both numbers. Might as well retire both. I'm more interested in what number his statue is going to have, because let's be honest,
good
that
question.
Dude's probably going to get a statue outside Staples. And when he does, I think it's probably going to be 8 on the front, 24 on the back.
I was just about to say that. That's what they should do.
A bit of a cop-out, but I think it's the right move.
Well, not really, because it'll be metaphorical also, because you'll have 8 on the front, which emphasizes the beginning of his career, and 24 on the back, which emphasizes what he did as a veteran. So, kind of perfect.
Yeah.
And you can put Shaq's number right on his hindside, you know, right down where it belongs, where he would want it.
I love it.
All right, so enough about Kobe. He harassed the Blazers for so many years, a couple of decades. We don't need to really bring up that guy's name ever again. You know, he's the greatest villain that we've had in our generation, but he's in the past tense. In the present and future, we have the Portland Trail Blazers led by Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Yusuf Nurkic. The list goes on and on. We wanted to do a little heat check section tonight and talk about the Blazers. That was actually Bryant's idea. I'm not going to try to steal from him. He suggested it. It's his idea. When you watch the Blazers so far, they've only played 14 games. They've won 2 in a row after losing 2 in a row. They have done some good things. They blew out Phoenix on opening night. Everyone was kind of getting a little too up in arms about that and thinking that it was, you know, they're the team of destiny now and Nurkic has arrived and all this good stuff. Now they're kind of back down to earth, maybe a little too far back down to earth. Where do you see them today? They're in the number 5 seed, but what does that mean barely a month into the season? If it even, I don't think it's even been a month yet.
It's actually a month as of tomorrow, at least as far as opening night goes. Right. But you know, you said the list goes on and on, but I don't think the list does go on and on. You said Lillard, McCollum, Nurkic, the list goes on and on. I think that's kind of the list right there. You know, Portland does have valuable contributors. Ed Davis in a contract year and with a healthy shoulder has been pretty fantastic value this season. Pat Connaughton, despite his terrible, terrible, awful, no good, horrific defense, has shown he can hit a shot.
Great reference.
Shabazz Napier is proving that he has value off the bench as a backup point guard. But the honest truth is, you know, behind Portland's quote-unquote big three, the list actually doesn't really go on because you still have issues with Evan Turner, even though he has played a little bit better than he did last season. Aminu is hurt at this point, so you're still waiting for him to get back into the lineup. You know, Caleb Swanigan looks fine for what he is, but he's not a difference maker. So as far as Portland in its current standing in the fifth spot, I don't see it sticking, mostly because there are teams behind them like Denver, Memphis, Utah, in particular the Oklahoma City Thunder, mm-hmm. who you have to worry about figuring it out. And I think that Portland is right in the mix with those teams, except for OKC, who I think is going to take a leap and probably get that fourth or fifth seed eventually. But as far as the overall competition goes, Portland is not a runaway fifth seed or fourth seed. It's going to be competing for the seventh or eighth spot late in the year with two or three or four other teams, which means you're probably looking at a 7-10 seed finish, depending on how things look at the end of the year.
So if you were to take opening night against Phoenix and call that the heavens, and you were to take that game against Memphis and let's call that not good, what game have we seen so far that you think best represents them? Is that the game against Denver? Is that the game against LA? Is that the other one against Phoenix? I mean, what game have you seen so far of the 14 they've played that you really think best emphasizes who they are today?
Well, I hope there's not too much of a recency bias here, but I actually think the game against Orlando is the one that is most representative of the team, meaning that they beat an inferior opponent. They are better than probably half the teams in the league, but they didn't do it convincingly.
Right.
And I think that, you know, Damian Lillard has had his moments throughout this early season where we're saying Lillard time is back. But there have also been a lot of moments early on in the year, in the first month, where the team has failed to close out opportunities. And
like
so
Memphis.
I think that the first couple games where they were beating down some inferior competition, you mentioned Phoenix, you know, the fact that they put their foot on the throat of them and just never let go was definitely a good sign. It shows that this team has the veteran experience and the drive to not let go of a big lead. The problem is that it's also struggled against some opponents that maybe not, or maybe aren't on the bottom tier level like Phoenix. But you know, they then played Milwaukee before they got Eric Bledsoe, and that I believe was their first loss of the season.
Right.
So yeah, that's a long-winded answer, but I think that the Orlando game really is the most telling so far, which is that they can pull out a close win against inferior opponents, but the fact that that was even a game is probably an issue at this point.
Well, and They've gone 5-5 in the last 10. They've got back-to-back games coming up this weekend against Sacramento, at Sacramento, then home against Sacramento. They're definitely a bottom-tier team in my eyes. I assume you agree with that statement. what do we need to see from them over the course of the next few games to think that maybe they're back on track? I mean, two wins in a row is great, but we need to get farther away from those two losses in a row. The flip side of that is, what are we seeing from this front court? I mean, you mentioned Ed Davis. He's been serviceable. We mentioned Nurkic, and he's part of their quote-unquote big three. Are we seeing what we were supposed to see? I mean, this was supposed to be a great team, a top 3 to 5 seed team in the NFC, in the Western Conference. I'm not really seeing that out of them so far. What are the struggles for? I mean, obviously, Myers Leonard isn't healthy yet, and we don't really know what to expect out of Caleb Swanigan, who's probably going to start at the 4 tomorrow night. What are you seeing from the front court that you really like, and what do you think they really need to improve on to get to where they need to go?
By the way, Myers Leonard not being healthy has nothing to do with this front court
sure.
because he is not going to impact this front court even when he is healthy. And
that's tradition.
I'm not saying that with a smile on my face, because I really did think that, you know, in a day and age in 2012 when he was drafted, before unicorn was part of the NBA lexicon, he really did have potential to become a unicorn at 7'1", who could run the court, finish above the rim, and shoot the three-pointer. But at this point, he has no value to the team, and I'm saying that as an observer, but I was also at a recent panel event where Jason Quick was speaking to the public, and he said out loud, Terry Stotts is done with Myers Leonard. He said Damian Lillard wants Myers Leonard to play better. He's frustrated that he's not, but he's still on his side. He said Neil Olshey still wants him. I'm assuming because he drafted him, and Neil Olshey is a very prideful general manager. I said, but Terry Stotts is absolutely done with Myers Leonard. And if it weren't for those two guys, at least this was my interpretation, if it weren't for Damian Lillard and Neil Olshey, Myers Leonard would not be on the roster at this point. So the fact that Myers Leonard isn't healthy, I'm not even taking that into consideration. Again, I want him to play well, but his time in Portland seems like it's about as done as it can be at this point. Really what I'm looking at is, how is Nurkic playing as far as his body language and his ability to stay out of foul trouble? He's been very mercurial in that sense, so I like his potential. I just don't necessarily love what he's done so far, but I'm not certainly giving up on him. I think he'll figure it out, especially by the All-Star break, and he'll be fine. But as far as the depth goes in the front court, I like Caleb Swanigan. I like Ed Davis, but I do think that Ed Davis is going to be trade fodder at the trade deadline, because he is on such a friendly contract that's in its final year. And I think that any team looking for a contract dump might look to swing a deal with Ed Davis involved. I feel like Portland has so much depth in the front court that it still has to figure out. And while I like the potential there, I am just still so confused by the rotation. So I like the guys like Swanigan who are really stepping up, and Ed Davis, and making a name for themselves, whereas guys like Zach Collins and Myers Leonard, despite his health, and Noah Vonleh are just kind of falling into the abyss at this point.
Well, and you've also got guys we haven't mentioned, like Zach Collins and Al-Farouq Aminu, who... What are we going to do with them as the season progresses? I mean, we haven't really seen a lot from Collins yet. That could be by design, or maybe he hasn't earned some minutes yet, or I don't know what it is, or maybe they don't think he's ready. He did have a kind of troubling preseason, so we're not really sure what to make of him yet. And for Aminu's been injured so far. They expect him back soon, but probably not for a couple weeks.
Yeah, you know, Aminu's been hurt, but when he comes back, I think he's going to get more time at the three than he is the four. Which will allow him to play perimeter defense, which is really, in my opinion, what his sort of calling card on the Trailblazers roster is. I don't think he'll be totally outcasted from the power forward position, especially considering just, again, like I said, there's depth there, but there's also a lot of confusion. So I think that he'll be a bit of a staple at some point, but I think that he's going to play more of the three to really establish a perimeter defense, but also some of these young guys at the four give them more of an opportunity.
So if he does come back and play the three, you now also got Harkless and Evan Turner. What do you do with them? And is it getting to a point where you got to move one of them? I mean, at some point you do have too many players with not enough minutes to go around.
Well, you definitely have to move somebody, but I think you also look to move Evan Turner back to the shooting guard spot, because as nice as Pat Connaughton has been as a three-point threat, his defense really has been atrocious, and so you probably look to use Evan Turner as a not so much an off-ball guard, but a de facto point guard when CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard is out. And then use his, you know, length and defensive prowess at that two spot where you wouldn't get that from either Lillard or McCollum.
Can we talk about his glasses? Is there anything we can do about it?
I mean, I'm a fan, so I'm not going to trash talk it, if we're being honest.
You're a fan of the glasses or a fan of Turner or both?
Oh, the glasses.
Oh, okay. You know, it's on point right now. It's on trend, so good for him. It's a little too much of an early 90s throwback for my taste. You know, grunge is great. And
hey, you know what? I always said, if I ever have to get glasses, I'm going to get the most Spike Lee-like glasses I can get. And so I'm a fan of glasses as an accessory.
I think Spike Lee would be an improvement. That'd be like a horn rim kind of deal. And these are more like 90s... pencil mustache creeper glasses. I don't really know if that's what he's going for, but hey, you know what? Whatever works for him, it's working for the team so far. They're 8-6. They've got probably two very winnable games coming up this weekend. And, you know, the big thing we haven't talked about is the white elephant in the room, or the pink elephant in the room. What do we do about Kevin Durant? You know, the Blazers, to my knowledge, are still a Kevin Durant short of being title worthy. What are your thoughts on that? You know, even if the team does make the leap forward and make the playoffs, can they do anything about Golden State yet?
Well, I think every team in the NBA is a Kevin Durant short of being right. a contender. I think that's how special of a player Kevin Durant is. In reality, you know, the Blazers can't do anything with their current roster as far as the top tier goes. They're either a free agent superstar away or a shocking organic growth rookie contract guy away from actually competing. And so, yeah, if you add a Kevin Durant to the Blazers, of course they're going to compete, no doubt about it. But I would say that honestly about most teams. I mean, at this point, Durant kind of has that LeBron-like effect where, you know, maybe the Brooklyn Nets don't quite apply, or the Phoenix Suns or Sacramento Kings don't quite apply. But if you put him on any sort of middling team, yeah, they're going to compete. And so the Blazers are certainly a massive piece away, like I said, either via the trade market, free agency, or most likely, but also not very likely in this moment, an organic rookie contract guy really exceeding his current value.
Gotcha. What if they pulled a trigger on a trade to Milwaukee for the Greek Freak? Do you think that would be the same kind of punch that Durant has, or is that still a piece missing?
It would be the same thing as Durant, probably even better just because of how young he is. The problem is you would have to sacrifice, you know, probably, I mean, I'd like to say CJ McCollum, but you're really talking Damian Lillard, probably the owner of Voodoo Donuts, the Made in Oregon sign with the Rudolph nose. They don't want it during 3 months or three seasons out of the year. They only want it with the Rudolph nose. Right. Like, that trade is just not happening. But I do agree, see what you're saying, that it's very comparable to a Kevin Durant. Obviously, you don't have the jump shot and the floor spreading there. But if you keep someone like a CJ McCollum, as well as, you know, as crazy as it sounds, like a Pat Connaughton or a Jake Layman, and you look to use those guys as spot-up shooters, yeah, the Greek Freak can make anybody a great player. We haven't quite seen him have that sort of LeBron effect where he really does make everybody else an all-star. But he is as good as it comes right now. And the fact that he's young and long and skilled and still trying to figure out his jump shot, despite his youth, really says that he is in that upper tier, that upper echelon superstar.
Yeah, I think getting a player of that caliber is what it's going to take if they really want to contend. I mean, as much as we all love Damian and CJ and Nurkic, that's just not enough. You need either one of those guys to go blasting off to a whole other level of superstar, or you need a fourth guy that really fits the team well. I'm not saying that he would per se, but the level that you basically either need Golden State to take a step back, which they're not going to do until probably next year or the year after when they start dealing with some contract woes, or you need your team to make a major step forward. I'm not sure who that's going to be, but that's what Portland needs at this point if they want to get serious about a title contention in the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I think that's all. I also think that's what Portland needs. Portland's really confusing right now, though, because they have the third best defensive efficiency in the NBA. And that, I mean, quite frankly, confuses the hell out of me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's sustainable, but I also wonder where that's coming from, especially with Aminu out. So when you think about pieces they're missing, you know, it's been very cliche, but also very accurate the past few years to say, oh, you need a very stout defensive presence on the block, or you need an extra defensive presence on the perimeter to make up for what Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum give up. But at this point, they're actually holding people to the third fewest points per 100 possessions in the NBA through an entire month. Again, I don't think that's sustainable, but I do think it's a bit telling that the Blazers have a lot of these sort of things that people don't realize and don't recognize, which in truth makes it really tough to figure out what it is they do need.
It really does, and you know, we'll hope that they get it figured out soon, because I would hate to see them waste Damian and CJ and not get a deep playoff run out of them. We really thought last year was going to be the year with Nurkic, and then he went down, and now that he's healthy and the rest of the team is mostly healthy, we'll see what they can do, but they got to get it going this year or next year, or they might be on the outside looking in yet again.
Yeah, this year is going to be really interesting. Like I said earlier, it's really going to depend on who steps up in that sort of 5 to 10 range and who stays sort of at this mean throughout the year. I think OKC does step it up. I think they figure it out. Clippers, still a little unsure of. I'm hesitant to say the Jazz make the playoffs just because they are going to be out 6 weeks without Rudy Gobert. Again, Memphis looks like a team that is a borderline playoff squad, and I do not expect them to fluctuate from that. I think they're going to consistently be that 7 to 8 spot, or 7 to 9 or 10, whereas OKC, I think, does get up to that 5 spot. So it's really just a matter of which teams excel and which ones sort of stay at that that mean that they're at now.
Yeah, and I think that's what we'll have to wait and see on. And you know, we will watch them with great emotion like we always do, and we'll cheer them on no matter what, but we're not really sure if this is the year yet. We'll find out. Let's switch gears over to football. We've got a few minutes left in the show, so we might as well waste a few minutes talking about some football. You know, nobody cares about that. It's, you know, not popular or anything. We've got a team in the Northwest, goes by the name of Seattle Seahawks. They're currently 6-3, second in the NFC West, right on the cusp of the playoff picture. I believe they're in line for the number 1 or number 2 wild card spot. You know, they've got a shot to take over the division. We're not sure if they will. The Rams look pretty hot this year. No one saw that coming. I don't care what they say. No one saw that coming. So you're coming off a win last week against Arizona, but what happened is you lost your left tackle, Dwayne Brown, that you just acquired a week ago from Houston. We're not sure how serious it is. He's a game time decision this Sunday. You're hosting the Atlanta Falcons, who you're trying to get revenge on for losing to them on the road last year in the divisional round. You're also down potentially Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor. We're not really sure what their availability is because they both got banged up in the last couple weeks. And the biggest, most hurtful thing is you're also down Richard Sherman, who's, to many people, the heartbeat of this defense. You know, it could be Cam, it could be Earl, but a lot of people think it's Richard, and he ruptured his Achilles against Arizona. While the game was a win, that's a major loss, and I'm not really sure what they can do about that. You know, those other players we talked about, Bryant, they're not necessarily the keys to the kingdom. You know, you can kind of get away with one of those guys being down because you've got some of the guys you can plug in. It's really hard to replace a shutdown corner in this league. How big of a deal to you is this as far as what they can do going forward? I mean, they're going to have to basically throw the ball a ton because they're going to be scored on more now than ever before without somebody locking down the left side.
Well, it's a big deal. I think that, you know, Sherman is, you know, you rattled off a list of players and that are hurt, who are all hurt. And I think that's unfortunate. It's obviously unfortunate, but until you got to Richard Sherman, you hadn't named off anyone who was truly irreplaceable. And then you said Sherman's name and all of a sudden your gut sinks a little bit. You realize, okay, this is a problem. And I think it's especially a problem because, like you said, they have Atlanta coming up. Atlanta has multiple wideouts who can burn you. Yep. So now you really have to think about it this way. Not only are you down your number one, you kind of have to think about it like you're down your number two and number three pass coverage corners as well, because as soon as Sherman goes down, your number two becomes your number one, and so all of a sudden your number three is your number two, which means someone like a Mohamed Sanu is that much more dangerous against a less experienced player. So I think that the ripple effect is going to be felt. As far as irreplaceable players on the Seahawks go, really it comes down to Sherman and Russell Wilson.
Absolutely.
And I think that if Sherman can, you know, or I guess I would say if his replacement does fine, you still have to worry about his replacement's replacement.
Right.
Right. Which is where a Sanu type player really comes into effect. And then as far as Russell Wilson goes, that guy is going to make plays on offense, even if they are not there. And so those are the two guys who I really think you just can't afford to lose. So the fact that they lost them is a huge problem. Now, I do think the wild card is still up for grabs. You know, really, I don't trust a team like in Arizona right now. So as far as, you know, behind them in the standing goes, I don't know. I'm really not too worried. I just think that if they do get to a meaningful game like the wild card, I have to worry, you know, about how deep they are, how skilled they are, deep into the rotation, and if a game like that is winnable at this point.
Yeah, the really interesting part that we're going to have to wait and see on is Shaq Griffin is the next man up in the cornerback rotation, and he's a rookie. He's been playing really well, but he also hasn't had the focus that comes with being the number one corner on the roster. And then number two could be Jeremy Lane, who they got as kind of a consolation prize of the deal for Dwayne Brown. He was supposed to be dealt, but he couldn't pass his physical, so they got him back anyway for like a third round pick or something like that. So definitely something that they definitely like having now. I don't know if they cared then, but now I guarantee you they're happy they have him back. And they also just re-signed Byron Maxwell, who was with the team in 2013-2014, actually drafted the same year as Richard Sherman by the Seahawks. Elevated to starter status in 2014. Great season, had 4 interceptions and 14 passes defensed. Pretty good numbers, but he's been on the rocks with Philadelphia and then Miami and ended up getting cut this year. It hasn't actually played this season. So we're not really sure what we're getting out of him. He knows the system and they know they like him, but is he the same player from 3 going on 4 years ago? That we don't know. And so he's going to be in the rotation, but it's going to be so much emphasis on the front seven getting pressure on the quarterback so that the defense doesn't have to do too much to shut down the passing attack. A team like Atlanta, who's really not playing very well this year, they suddenly look really scary. And you've got another game with the Rams, who are the number one offense in the NFL right now. And some of these early games that looked really drastic now look even more drastic because you had a good defense then, and now I'm not so sure you will. It is only one player you're replacing, but it's Richard Sherman. He's one of the best corners in the league, perhaps ever. This is not a guy that you replace with one man. You've got to have an all-hands-on-deck, next-man-up kind of mentality. We're going to find out on Sunday if that really works or not when you got Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu coming to town with Matt Ryan throwing balls to him.
Well, like you said, he is one of a kind. I think that he is not only someone who is polarizing, which he is. We love to talk about it. We love to feature him. He's very polarizing. But I think he's polarizing for many reasons, including how impactful he is. And I think that there are certain players out there in all leagues who are polarizing for completely other reasons. And so the fact that he is not just fun to talk about, but actually worthy of our analysis is very important. And I think it's very telling when it comes to what he does for this team and what the team's going to be missing. Now, one thing real quick, I will do a hard left turn here because you did mention my Miami Dolphins at one point.
Right.
Shortly before that, you actually mentioned something along the fact of welcoming back as well. It wasn't in relationship to the Dolphins, but I got to be honest. We recently welcomed back Jay Cutler to the lineup, and I have a gut feeling I could care just about as much as Jay Cutler himself cares. That team is just horrible to watch right now. And right. I think we spoke about this just a little bit at the beginning of the season, how, you know, we go into this year knowing it's a one-year contract, mm-hmm. knowing it's Jay Cutler, Jay Apathy Cutler.
Smoking Jay.
And we kind of know what we're getting ourselves into as far as both the fan base and Cutler himself. But man, it's that team is just kind of hard to watch right now. And I didn't hate the Cutler signing. I actually liked it for the fact that I could sit back and be as apathetic as he himself is and just kind of take it in, realize if you get a win, that's great. You're not going to be a top, you know, pick team in the draft, but you're also probably not going to do any damage in the playoffs. It was just going to be a fun year. But man, he's hard to watch, and they're hard to watch. And they traded Ajayi, which I don't hate because I think he was a little overvalued coming into this year. But I just had to get all that off my chest because you brought up the Dolphins.
That's a lot of pent up aggression there, Brian. You've been holding on to that for a while.
Hey, it's been like 6 weeks since I've joined you on this. I've been waiting for this, man.
Wow, that was some good stuff. Yeah, the really unfortunate part about the Dolphins this year, not to add salt to the open wound, but the really big thing about Cutler being signed was that a lot of people were saying, you know, this is the most talent he's ever had around him, and this is the best supporting cast, and just imagine what he can do with all this talent around him. I'm like, well, that just makes me sick to look back now and go, yeah, what have you been doing with all this talent, Jay? You're just wasting all of it. It's just awful.
I think that's the problem for anyone who's ever watched Jay Cutler at all, is that we wish we had as big of an arm as he has. We wish we had the overall talent. Because if he cared as much playing in a Dolphins game as much as I cared watching a Dolphins game, he might be the greatest quarterback of all time.
Right.
And that's just not the case. And it was never the case for the Bears. It wasn't the case this year.
Definitely not with the Broncos.
Like I said, it was a one-year contract. He knew what it was. We all knew what it was. It's entertaining and frustrating. And like I said, as long as you maintain sort of a ho-hum, apathetic mentality, you can watch it and be fine. The problem is just that that's the same ho-hum apathetic mentality that he seems to have behind center. So
it really does.
Yeah. 6 weeks I've been waiting to say all that. I'm glad I got it out.
Well, I appreciate you having the courage to say it on the air. We appreciate it.
Hey, sign me up for a postseason postmortem Dolphins podcast. We'll record 6 straight days. I'll have plenty to say.
Well, I'm sure you heard about good Jay, bad Jay. I don't know that you've seen a lot of good Jay, and that's a problem. You know, there's still another half the season to go without a bye week, so maybe he's just tired at this point. But, you know, to his credit, he has reached apathy level master. For someone to be paid the amount of money he's making to be on television every Sunday and just look like you literally could not care less what happens, it takes a great deal of apathy, you know, maybe more than any of us actually have. And so maybe that's just why he keeps getting signed, is they're so enamored with how someone can care so little about the success on the field in front of a national audience.
Oh, for sure. And you know what? To bring it back to the Trailblazers somehow, just because that's
a hard right turn. Okay.
Yeah, we made a hard left turn. We'll make a hard right turn now. That, you know, I've been outspoken recently about Yusuf Nurkic and how he gets kind of down on himself and doesn't seem to show the best body language, but at least that shows that he is emotionally affected by what's happening on the court. Obviously, Damian Lillard has always been that same way. Maybe not so much the lows, but his highs are especially high, and he keeps his lows intact, which I think is a good way of going about that. CJ McCollum against Orlando, he got into it with Evan Fournier. I'm not sure I'm into the blowing of the kisses. That's, you know, to each their own.
That's a Lance Stevenson kind of move.
At least he was into the moment. Like I said, bring it back to the Blazers. I think these guys show the right emotions in the right moments. And even if they're not winning, I think that that's something that fans in Portland can really sort of hang their hat on, which is that the team cares about its own fate, which, you know, what else can you ask for?
Well, we definitely get that out of the Portland players and their fans. We definitely get that out of the Seattle players and their fans. So we're pretty darn lucky with those two teams in this Northwest that, as much as the players care, the fans care even more. And that's really tremendous, because there's plenty of fan bases and teams across the nation that just don't care on that level. And I don't know why, but here in Portland and in Seattle, it's really neat to see how much they care.
It really is. And I do think it has, at least as far as Portland is concerned, it has to do with the fact that Portland forever was a one sport town. Mm-hmm. Now it's a two sport town, but as far as the major four goes, it's still a one sport. And you know, Seattle, once it lost the
Supersonics,
it kind of became the same mentality with the Seahawks. So I do think that there's a bit of a cultural aspect there,
as far as the local
sports resources go. But it's really, really nice to see, and I think it's fairly unique across the country.
It really is, and you know, we're lucky. We have the best fans in the world here. I don't care what other parts of the country or world are saying, that it's here in the Northwest. This is where they live. So I'm proud to be one. I know you are as well. We're both, you know, fans of the sports that we cover. You know, you're definitely better at separating yourself from the professional to the fan side than I am. But I'm a homer. I'm not going to deny it. So, you know, I've got many dark things to say about my Green Bay Packers right now, because as much as I love Brent Hundley and how good of an athlete he is, he's just not playing on the level they need him to right now, and that team just stinks without Aaron Rodgers. And at this point, I hate saying this out loud, but I feel like Jay Cutler might be an improvement. And I don't know how to feel about that.
I won't go that far, but what I will say is that, yeah, you know, I definitely separate myself as much as I can. But at the same time, we're sitting here talking about the Trailblazers amongst other topics. I look up from my computer screen, and the very first thing I see is a framed Brian Grant autographed jersey, a Brandon Roy painted caricature, and a ironically broken Greg Oden bobblehead. So I have my fandom
at the knee,
as well.
I assume.
You know what? His hands actually fell off.
Huh. Even more ironic.
I went to glue them back on and thought, you know what? This is more fitting. So I just left it. But you know, I have my fandom. We all do. There's no way to 100% separate yourself. It just works out well for me, because I can laugh at my Dolphins instead of cry.
Well, in closing, which are you more excited for? The Dolphin season to be over, which is also the Jay Cutler experience is over, or the new Star Wars movie?
You know,
they'll be about the same time.
I hate to say this. I've been happy to admit everything I've admitted on air, but I think this is going to be the one that might not get me an invite back. I've never seen a Star Wars movie.
Well, that just means that you're in for a treat when you finally wise up. I mean, that doesn't mean that you're not a good add to the show. It just means I can't wait to make you watch one and then bring you on the air just to talk about it.
That is a much nicer response than anyone else I've ever told that.
If they really want you to see it, that's how they should respond.
Oh, I get a lot of four-letter words when I say that. So I
would, you know, from my seat, I'm jealous of you because you have not seen them before, whereas I have. So that means that you have an experience out of this world, literally, that you're going to experience at some point down the road. You know, if I were you, if you haven't seen them yet and you don't have any major pressure to see them from people that you really need to impress, I would just not watch them until they're all done, which is going to be probably 20 years from now, and just watch them all. Just binge it.
That's a great perspective. I actually just told someone the exact same thing, but substitute Star Wars with The Matrix. They said they had never seen the original Matrix, and I said, I'm honestly jealous of you because now you'll get to see it on Blu-ray or whatever it is you want to watch it on. Get the incredible experience that I wish I could truly relive.
A really good friend of mine is just finishing the Harry Potter books for the first time, and she hasn't seen any of the movies yet, so my wife and I are really excited to have her over and watch all the movies with her and see them for the first time from her perspective.
I love it.
So we'll have to follow up with you on that Star Wars assignment, and you know, I'll still be talking to you in 20 years. I'll follow up with you on that one.
Deal.
All right, well, Brian, it's been a pleasure, as always. We're definitely not going 6 weeks before the next one, if nothing else, so you can rant about your Dolphins if you need to. But we'll definitely talk more Blazers and Seahawks.
I'm always good for that.
All right, he's Bryant Knox of Oregon Sports News. I'm Casey Mabbitt. This has been Fireside Sports. We appreciate you checking in. We're happy to have you back, and we promise to be more consistent this time. You know, we don't really have a good excuse for why it's been 6 weeks, but it is what it is, and we'll move on, and we'll get to the next episode. So, Bryant, thank you again. We'll have you on again, and thank you all for checking in. This is Casey Mabbitt of Oregon Sports News. Good night.